everyone, and welcome to the PYA webinar, Women in Yachting. My name is Rhea, I am your host, and I am very pleased to be bringing this webinar to you today. It's highlighting the amazing opportunities available and how women can achieve both their personal and professional goals in the super yacht sector. I'd like to introduce our esteemed panel of guests, and we'll start with Chandra Robinson. She is the co-owner of Start Yachting. How are you?
I'm very well, Rhea. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, what your background is?
Briefly, I joined yachting about 9 years ago. I worked my way through almost all of the positions and eventually ended up in a chief steward role on a charter yacht. At that point, COVID hit and I decided to step away from it and then realized that I could help people coming into the industry by providing them a safe place where they can come and ask questions and just give them a little bit of guidance and open up a whole new world to people making dreams come true, basically.
Nice. Well, welcome and thank you for being here. Next up, we have a woman that needs absolutely no introduction for sure, Lynn Edwards. She is head of interior for PYA as well as a luxury hospitality management trainer. Welcome, Lynn. Thank you for being here.
Oh, I'm delighted to be here, especially with such great company. I love this topic. I don't think there's a better time for women to get started in yachting. How wonderful a time now. I started in 1982, so it's hundreds of years ago, and yachting was a very different place than it is now. I knew nothing about it, had been living in Australia, came back to Europe because my mother got remarried and found myself in Antibes visiting my sister who just started working on yachts and discovered the yachting industry. No idea that it even existed. So I was offered a job, jumped on a boat, and that was it, 40 years ago. And I've been in the yachting industry in various capacities since then. So yes, as a stewardess for many years, for 10 years, I still work as a stewardess. At my ripe old age, I still work in the summer months on a super yacht, which I love. My primary job is insight trainer with luxury hospitality. And as you say, I'm the director of interior training for the PYA. So quite a few hats, but they're all yachting related. And it's easy to, you just have to juggle them all.
Well, you're an expert at juggling as well. I guess you have to be with interior crew. And of course, we have Dominique Smith. She is a purser and also co-owner of Virtual Pursers. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, Rhea.
No, thank you for joining us. I mean, a purser is a very important role on board, but tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I started yachting back when it wasn't so popular or well known, which I'm very grateful for. And basically heard about it through a friend. I went over to France, did the whole dock walking thing and worked my way up from junior stewardess. I've worked on some lovely, lovely boats. I worked all the way from a 35 meter to, I ended on a 90 meter. So quite a range. And I'm very grateful for that kind of experience. Then just before COVID hit as well, left the industry to go land-based. And that's when we started up Virtual Pursers.
Nice. Well, thank you for joining us. We really appreciate it. And we have Emily Coates. She is a first mate and has also been a deckhand at one stage in her life. How are you?
Hi, I'm great. Thank you.
Well, tell us a little bit about you and what you're up to.
Yeah, so I started yachting in 2011. As deckie with my yacht master already. I have a background of sailing and water sports and just sort of passion for the sea. And so deckie was a natural sort of starting point for me. And I worked in the industry for about 8 years, finishing as chief officer. And then since then, I've moved ashore for the last 3 years. So I sort of got the experience of working on board and now ashore, still in the yachting industry and supporting yachts in a management company. So,
well, thank you for joining us. And last but not least, we have Captain Kelly Gordon, who has been doing the media rounds lately. How are you, Captain?
I'm good. Thanks for having me. I was so excited to do this. You and POIA, I'm so happy to be here. This is an awesome panel of ladies to be along with, and really happy to be here. I've been in the industry for almost 15 years now. I can't believe that it keeps creeping up on me little by little, and entered into the industry a rather unconventional way, really through moving out to the coast to go to grad school, and found this industry, and it reeled me in, and I haven't wanted to leave since. I mean, it's just been a tremendous passion of mine, and I've been able to work my way up the ladder, and I have my 500 ton masters now international. So the next step for me is my 3000. And I think I should have that knocked out in the next couple of years, but so I'm getting there, and it's been great really to see the industry grow in terms of women. And it's awesome to just be a panel member with all these great women here today.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for joining us. Now, I want to start at the beginning. And so, Chandra, that comes down to you. If there is someone out there that is watching this and is thinking about taking their first step into yachting, what kind of advice can you give them? What sort of steps do they need to take in order to start into the super yacht sector?
Well, my first bit of advice that I can give is, obviously, besides for doing all the basic courses that you need to get in, you know, the SSW, NG1, all that sort of stuff, is to really focus on something that you can bring to the table that's different. If you really want to hone in on something specific, if you can afford it and you have the time, try to open up your knowledge base by doing as many of the introductory courses as you possibly can before even starting. With the industry growing now, and especially with so many people who have experience who are also looking for work, you really have to bring your A game, and that is as far as your work ethic, your personality, as well as making sure that you are really, really qualified for the role. So my best bit of advice is just to, you know, do your homework, do your research, and just get going. And, you know, having the right attitude and the right mindset will get you really, really far, but you have to put in the work for sure.
And what about your CV? You know, I see a lot of things on social media. People have a lot of difficulties with CVs. I've spoken to different captains about the type of CVs that they'd like to see come across their desk. What is your advice on that?
Well, my advice, and I didn't follow this advice when I first started, that's why I'm so particular about it now, is do what the agents ask you to do. So if they give you a template and they say, we prefer it if your CV looks according to this template, use that template. They have a million reasons why they want it that specific way. And I didn't do it in the beginning, and that's probably why it took me so long to find my first job. But with everything, all the mistakes that I made along the way, now I can actually give people the right advice. And I've had some of my students who land their first job within 2 days of arriving in our team. So if somebody gives you a template, use it. Don't come up with your own styles and all that sort of stuff. And really use the advice that people give you. I know all of us want to customize it and make it all fancy and stuff. But at the end of the day, the agents are going to be the ones that actually forward your CV on to boats that they think that you would be suitable for. So it really, really helps to just follow the guidelines that they give you. And it also makes it easier for them to spot all the information that they're looking for if they already have it in a sequence that everybody is the same. So it makes it easier for them to scan the CVs. Especially now as well, with everything that's going on, you know, dock walking is almost a no-go. All these other factors taking it into account, it's really a good time to sit and make sure that your entire online presence is on point, not just your CV, but how you're presenting yourself on everywhere online. It's really, really important.
That was definitely a question I was going to ask, because, you know, we have seen in the last year, of course, dock walking is something that we can't do. And in the past, that has been a very big way for people that are new into the industry to find their first job. Your social media presence, is that something that future employers will take a look at? Will they look at your personal Facebook page? Will they look at your personal Twitter, your personal Instagram? And how important is it to make sure that you are portraying yourself in a professional manner?
Well, I believe that both Kelly, Emily, and Lynn can confess to this, but when people get hired for a position, many, many times, the chief stewardess, the chief officer, the captain, they'll go onto that person's social profile. And, you know, they want people that have like an outgoing personality and stuff, but if your entire social presence is all you partying and all that sort of stuff, then your CV will get pushed to the side. Well, I've seen this happen. I mean, I personally don't really do the social media scouting thing, but I have been on boats where that was the first thing that they looked at before they even looked at the person's details on their CV. So it is really important, yeah.
Well, thank you. Now I want to head to Deckhand. Emily, you're going to be covering this. Unfortunately, we didn't manage to get Kay on board. But Emily, what were the steps that you took to become a deckhand? It's not a traditional role, as it were, for a woman. So what did you find that was needed for you to become a deckhand?
Persistence and resilience, I think. I sort of started, even in 2011, there were less females on deck than there are now. And so I didn't really have someone that I could speak to about how to do it. And it's sort of trial and error, and it might've taken me a little bit longer, but I knew what I really loved to do. And that was everything that came with being on deck. And I was advised to go for the stewardess route and maybe transfer out onto deck later, but just to get my first step aboard, and changing my CVs, taking things off that I had on there that was part of me. And I think in the end, what got me the job was sticking by what I am and what I like, which was going back to the deckhand role, putting all the stuff that I'd done back on my CV and having conviction and confidence that you can do this job. And so for, as Chandra was saying, as much qualification, as many qualifications as you can get them. I think it just sort of shows that you're committed, that you're motivated to do this, that you love it. And as women out on deck, there's absolutely no reason why you would be not chosen for the role over a male. There's absolutely everything that involves a job you can do just as well as a man can. So I would say for the women out there that are wanting to be a deckhand, it's so much fun. So go for it. There's absolutely nothing stopping you. Yeah.
Well, for those of the people out there that are viewing this and have never been in the yachting industry, can you describe really what the tasks are on board as a deckhand?
So it ranges. For me, I was on yachts of from 30 to 75 meters. And I know it can range as you go up in size as well. But for my experience, it was anything from mooring, docking situations out on deck, anchoring, as well as cleaning the boat a lot. a lot of the time you're doing washdowns and maintaining the exterior of the boat. You do paint repairs whenever you can, varnish repairs, driving the tenders, doing water sports when you have guests on board, doing night watches on anchor or underway as a lookout supporting the officer of the watch at the time. So you're sort of involved with the cleaning, the running of the boat, the guest activities, a whole range, really.
So what type of tickets would they need or courses would you advise them to take that would look great on a resume in order to apply for a deckhand job?
Yeah, so as Chandra said, as apart from the mandatory certificates that you need to join the industry, I would say things that buffer your CV, make you look more attractive would be Powerboat 2, if you could get that. That's an RYA course. PwC instructors are also useful to have on board because a lot of commercial yachts are RYA centres where you need certain qualifications to teach guests to use jet skis and things like that. I'd say Yacht Master, if you can get that. That can take a few weeks or a few months, depending on what your experience is. But that also holds a good level of responsibility with it. So PDSDs, proficiency in designated security duties, that's not essential, but it's just an upgrade from the STCW, the mandatory. These are all online, all available to sort of research yourself. And there's also an MSN 1858, which you can look up, and that sort of sets out the process of qualifications that you would need from DECI, taking you all the way through to officer. So you can also check those as well.
Nice. Thank you, Emily. Well, we're going to move on to the interior. Lynn, the expert on all things interior. What can you tell us about the interior? And let's start off with what that job entails. If somebody is looking to get on board and they want to be interior crew, what are they going to be expected? What duties are they going to be expected to perform?
Okay. Well, as Emily said, you know, lots of cleaning and that sort of thing. But essentially, the tasks will depend on the size of the boat. So if you're working on a smaller yacht, say up to about 50 meters, 60 meters, you'll probably be doing a mixture of housekeeping and service. Both of which, actually, even though, and there is a shift in paradigm about this, thankfully, even though many people just think, oh, well, that's just serving food or cleaning toilets and making beds, what can be difficult about that? But we're talking here about super yachts, and super yachts are very expensive, mainly toys, I suppose, for very rich people. Now, in order to take care of the interior of a super yacht, you really do need a degree of expertise. You need to know how to clean gold plate, how to care for silk and wool carpets, how to clean alligator skin on the walls or snake skin or silk headliners. You need to know this stuff because one tiny mistake can be extremely expensive. In exactly the same way as you need to have a degree of expertise in the laundry room. How do you take care of haute couture clothes? It's not the same as, you know, chucking the crew uniform in the washing machine. Even that needs to be done properly. And ironing techniques and all that sort of thing, how to read the laundry labels. Every single part of being a stewardess needs a degree of expertise. It needs knowledge in cleaning, for example, which includes the safety aspects of using certain chemicals in closed spaces or not, or what particular products you can use on surfaces. In the food service part of the job, you need to be very well informed about people's preferences and dietary requirements. What is a celiac? What can a lacto-ovo-vegetarian eat? What might Muslims eat? What can they, can't they do? What are their religious ceremonies that they might follow? All of this sort of stuff. Before you even learn about the serving techniques, of which there are many. So all of this, this level of service is something you need to know. And if anybody was working in even a three-star hotel or a two-star hotel, the owner of that hotel or the manager of that hotel would not put somebody from the street into that hotel without some proper training. So do people need training? Yes, of course they do. Of course they do. We have for the interior crew, you know, deck and chefs and captains and engineers have all had structured training programs in place forever. In the yachting industry, we have a really amazing training program, which it forms a career path through the industry, which is called GUEST. GUEST stands for Guidelines for Unified Excellence in Service Training. The PERSA training is now part of the GUEST program. It's all accredited by IAMI. It used to be accredited by the PYA. It passed to IAMI at the beginning of last year, so for about 15 months ago. We have introductory courses for people coming into the industry, right up to the management courses, and then on to PERSA courses. So all of the different elements and the different levels are covered, everything from food service to housekeeping to wine to butler services, valet services, bartending, barista, cigar service, flower arranging, you name it. Every single element of the interior is covered by these courses. They are not mandatory. The MCA knows about them and is very much a supporter of the courses. They're not yet mandatory. We're trying to introduce more safety elements so that maybe they will look at them more closely to become mandatory. It wasn't so long ago. Of course, another course you have to have is food hygiene, the food safety or food hygiene courses. these were only made mandatory, I think, about 3 years ago. It's crazy that an industry based on food service, certainly on the interior, did not have mandatory food service or food hygiene courses. Now they are mandatory. They can at the moment, because of COVID, be done online as a blended learning, and you can take the examinations in a training centre. But up until then, because there was a lot of cheating going on when it was allowed to be online, so the MCA had to put their foot down and said only courses done in the classroom were accepted. Bona fide classes, but now, because of COVID, the courses can be done online and the examinations done in a training centre, and there are many of them around the world, really. So just a matter of looking. The guest program has 24 training schools around the world. If you want to look it up, it's guest-program, which is spelled the American way, PROGRAM.com.
Well, and if anybody is a little bit overwhelmed by all of that, because I frankly would be, what would you suggest being the absolute minimum that they would need to get in at the ground floor? A green Stu coming in, you know, she's got a budget, and she just wants to get started on a yacht, but she wants to have a level of expertise, because these courses can be taken throughout time. What would you suggest being the absolute minimum that they should have prior to heading out and looking for a job?
Yeah, so apart from your STCW and your ENG one, get the introductory stewardess course. And of course you have to have your food hygiene course. So get those two, get your foot on the rung. I know it's an investment, but it's an investment in yourself. Once you've got a job on a yacht, you're going to be earning 2,500 euros or dollars or whatever the boat is paying you a month, plus your gratuities if you're going to be working on a charter yacht. So this could be just a temporary loan from somebody, member of family or from your bank or whatever. Get yourself started with a nice solid foundation. It will make you feel more comfortable with the work you're doing, and that being comfortable will create confidence, and that will translate into your interaction with your guests, with the other crew members. It's a good footing to have.
And once you get on board, do yachts tend to pay for interior training to push them a little bit further, or is that usually resting on your shoulders alone?
Yeah, no, yachts have training budgets. A lot of them, of course, will go into engineer and deck because they're very focused on moving up the ladder. Well, this paradigm, as I said, is shifting. You've got very, very professional minded stewardesses and purses coming into the yachting industry. And part of that training budget can absolutely go to them. And the program is there. And this is a very well recognized industry driven program. So the captain would see straight away by looking at the website, the guest program website, that it is a very well-structured, well-recognized course. And there's no reason why a training budget couldn't go that way. It makes his job easier. He doesn't need to micromanage the interior. He needs a very proficient chief stewardess or interior manager or head of housekeeping, however, depending on the size of the boat, to manage that part. It's not going to be his thing. That's why he's a captain. He doesn't, probably won't have his proficiency in interior. He needs to pass it on.
And is some of these courses, can they be done while you're on board? Can they be done in your downtime? I mean, charter, when we're talking charter, there hardly is ever any downtime, of course. But if it's an owner-operated boat, sometimes there are times where you are on board, the owner isn't there, and you do have a little spare time. Is it possible to do some of these courses and up your game?
Yep, it absolutely is. They're modular courses. Some of them, of course, have to be done in a classroom, like the service courses. You have to see people in action, correct the way they stand, the way or everything, and actually serve food to guests so that we can see that. But because of COVID, a lot of training schools have created blended learning courses where at least part of the courses, particularly the administration, the human resource parts of the course, can be done online. So yes, they can be done in downtime. There are some parts of it which would have to be done in a training school.
Now that makes it all sound so much easier. Thank you so much, Lynn. Let's move on to Dominique. Now you are a purser. And one thing that I have noticed through my interviews in the past is that in the past 10 years, captains have ended up having so much more paperwork. And a lot of that is something that a purser is capable of doing, takes over and frees the captain up to be literally a captain, which is what his main job is. Tell us a little bit about the purser role and how you can achieve that goal.
So the purser role is quite a huge responsibility. You have to have a lot of knowledge behind what you're doing, and a lot of experience. It's not something to be taken lightly. And I know there's a lot of girls in the industry that are extremely ambitious and they want to kind of skip the steps and, you know, do a purser course after 2 or 3 years in the industry and become a purser, which is super admirable. But it's a role that requires a lot of maturity. And you definitely have to know what you're doing, because if you make a mistake, it could have severe consequences. So, you know, you have to have background knowledge in like maritime law, accounting, things like that, which are extremely important. And yes, captains are constantly bombarded with paperwork for different procedures, and it just keeps coming. And now with COVID, it's even worse. Because they have to process so many things to make sure it's safe for guests and crew on board. The purser, other than the chief officer, the purser is also, you know, an assistant to the captain, and helps him out or her out with day-to-day administration so that they can concentrate on the core tasks that they need to focus on to make sure, you know, the boat is safe and running properly. To ensure that, you know, everything's great for the guests and crew are safe and everyone's having a good time. So yeah, it is a huge responsibility.
Would you suggest that if somebody ultimately wants to become a purser, that they actually sort of work their way up through the ranks, if they, you know, whether they start as deck, whether they start as interior crew, but to get a feel for all those roles on board before they head for purser?
Yes, I think it's definitely important. As I said, also the maturity aspect of dealing with all of these matters is so important. And if you skip a step, you're kind of doing yourself an injustice, because it's all a learning curve, you know, and especially the step up from chief stewardess to purser is a huge one. They're extremely different roles. So if you have that base of kind of a leadership role and then you step up to purser, it's extremely valuable. So I would definitely recommend that you work your way up. It's only beneficial to yourself.
Well, and the great thing about a purser job too is that we have seen in the past few years that it is possible to not only be a purser on board, but now we're seeing that job being taken off board and becoming virtual, such as in the company that you have set up. So this kind of job, you will do it on board. And when you do decide, at some stage, most people do decide that they want to go back on land. This is a job that you can do from land. Is it any more difficult or is it just the same?
So there's obviously certain things we can't handle on board, such as cash and passports, but everything else is pretty much digitalized. And, you know, it's a lot of paperwork and emailing and communications. So that's easily done ashore. And the reason Beck and I started the company was because we loved our careers so much. And, you know, we did want to settle down, but we didn't necessarily want that to be the end of our yachting careers. So we kind of wanted to facilitate a way to keep our careers alive and, you know, pave the way for other persons who do want to leave the industry but love their job and have this vast amount of knowledge and experience and have it not go to waste, and assist, you know, captains that don't necessarily have space for persons on board but kind of need the help because of all the mounting paperwork and all of that coming in. So, yeah, it is easily achievable. And some yachts do have land-based purses, like outside of our company. So it's definitely the way the industry is moving.
Nice. Thank you so much. And Captain Kelly Gordon, tell us how you reached your status of captain and what it takes to become a captain.
I was a little bit of a late bloomer. I didn't start until my 20s. And that was after, like I mentioned earlier, that I went to grad school out on the East Coast and found the yachting industry. And I was really fortunate enough to run into an individual that I think admired and saw my drive and my thirst for knowledge and my curiosity, and really just kind of took me under his wing. And I ran with it, and I started from the bottom and worked through every different department on the boat, except for chef, because that's just not my territory. But you know, I worked interior, I worked exterior, and spent a ton of time in the engine room and obviously at the helm. And his frame of mind was that if you're going to run this, you need to know a little bit about every department in order to be a good captain. And I still feel that way today in terms of my own crew. You know, there's never anybody saying that's not my job. You know, if you need to pitch in and help out in another area on the boat, then that's what we're going to do. And so with him taking me under his wing and just showing me all of the different departments and allowing me to work in all of the different departments, I climbed the ladder pretty quick, but I worked hard at it. I have a ton of sea time and was very inquisitive and very driven and just kept pushing and had that perseverance and that drive and being a woman in the industry. Obviously in the deck department was my focus. You know, when you're feeling a little bit down every now and again, you're still going to keep pushing. And so I did and started off with a small license and just worked my way up through the sea time and the size vessels that I was on and to get where I'm at, and I'm still going.
So do you think, like, where are your career goals? Is this the ultimate for you? You're just going to continue to push your captain's tickets and just go to larger and larger vessels?
I love my job. I do. I had a career before this, and it wasn't that I didn't like it, but it didn't provide what I needed intrinsically. Just the way that I am, I need that continual challenge. I need to continually be learning, and every day is different on board, and the weather's always different. You're always going to a different place. It's a boat, seems like something's always broken, so there's always something to fix. So the learning just is never ending, and that intrinsically is a huge attraction for me. So yeah, my plan is to keep pushing, to keep climbing. I'm not so far away from my 3,000 ton, and I'll be one of not many that has that when I finally do get that. And so to just keep climbing to larger and larger boats. Yeah. And I think, like every captain, I think I'll find my sweet spot in terms of how many crew do I actually want, and you know, what type of family do I want to work for? You know, I always say that there's three things that I look for from my perspective career-wise, and it's the people, meaning the owner. It's the program, where are we going, and obviously the pay, and each job has to have each of those elements, and especially the people part, because this is such an intimate job. And part of what I did with the Pop podcast, where they dove into how I was wired up here, I know that I am a touchy-feely, kind of go by my what the vibe in the room kind of person. And since you're essentially living in their space and they're living in your space, it's really important for me to work for someone that energy is there. And I know that about myself, but it just at any rate, it's such an intimate job. And so moving up though, I got to make sure that as you move along, and I think for anybody in the industry, not every boat is going to be a right fit for you. So you got to look for the boat, the crew, the owner, the program that's a good fit for yourself. Yeah, when you're young and you're first starting out, you kind of got to pay your dues, and you got to get your feet wet, and got to get on board. But that's where I am now, is just to keep pushing and to keep climbing with my tickets and the size vessels and my crew. I'm really huge on educating my crew and teaching them every facet that I can. And that's where I'm going with it.
Well, for the women out there that are looking at yachting and haven't actually taken that step yet, what type of responsibilities does a captain have on board? What rests on your shoulders every day when you go to work?
It's huge. My mate nailed it the other day. You know, she said, a lot of your work is up here and a lot of hers is physical. And I said, you know, you're right. I'll wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, worried about the weather, double checking my charts, even though it's a trip that I've made 3 or 4 times and I know where I'm going. I'll worry about, you know, any repairs that have recently been made on the boat, or ultimately at the end of the day, it's my responsibility to make sure that the people on board, the crew, the owners, the guests, myself, all make it from point A to point B safely, along with the vessel. And when you think about it, that's enough to keep you up at night. And it really is a huge responsibility, you know. For example, there's a boat that has reached out to me that needs to reposition from Fort Lauderdale to Detroit, and that's quite a voyage. And they had a recall on their fire extinguishing system in the engine room, and they're debating on whether they want to go or not. And it's like you've got to really think about if you're going to do something like that, because you're putting lives on the line. You know, you're potentially going to be 100 miles offshore, and when you're out there, you're out there. There's nobody. You're not protected by the four walls of the lakes anymore. You know, you're offshore, you're at sea, and yeah, you have an EPIRB, and yeah, you have a life raft, but at the end of the day, ultimately, I'm responsible for making sure that these people get from A to B safely. And, you know, I have moms and dads to answer to for my young crew members, and I have my own mom to answer to as well, you know, as well as the owner and his or her vessel. So it's a huge responsibility, but I wouldn't give it up for the world. I love the responsibility that I have. I love my job. You know, I bounce out of bed every morning loving to go to work. Are there days that it's stressful as hell? Yeah, there are. But I wouldn't give it up for the world. So, you know, any man for that matter, anybody looking to get started into this industry, 100% go for it. I can't be your cheerleader big enough. It's I love what I do. I really do. And I think everybody here on this panel can agree. And being a woman in this industry, when I started, there wasn't many of us, and it's growing. There still isn't a huge number of us, especially in the deck department. But, you know, it's you're seeing more and more of it. And I like that. And you know that I'm a huge proponent of women in this department, and I have a voice to use, and I'm using it all over the place to try to encourage or inspire any young woman that would want to become a part of this industry.
Well, and we really do appreciate it. Emily, I'm going to bring it back over to you. You actually made your way up to the ranks to the position of first mate. Can you tell us what the difference is between first mate and captain?
And captain, I would say you're sort of there to manage the day-to-day deck department. You've got your, depending on how big the vessel is, you've got your second officers, or you've got your bosuns below you, and then you've got your deckies. And so you're every day doing meetings, doing briefings in the morning, setting out the day, who's got what tasks, making sure that all the crew are have everything that they need, support them whenever they need advice or help. But you also step inside and you support the captain. So you sort of wear two hats, as it were. You make sure the guys and girls outside have have everything that they need, and that the boat is being maintained and it's healthy and work is efficient. But you also come inside and you make sure that the captain has the support they need, that the bridge is good to go all the time, and that a lot of the crew documents are taken care of. If there's no purser, you're sort of playing that hat as well. And speaking to the management companies ashore at the same time who support the vessel with various things like compliance and crew support and all that sort of stuff. So I'd say it's quite a jack of all trades job. So I think that the difference is that the responsibility is on the captain, and the captain also oversees all departments of the boat. You're just looking after your deck, but you're supporting the captain wherever they need.
You know, how did you manage? Sorry, Kelly, before I let you speak, how did you go from deckhand up to first mate? What was your path?
I was deckie for about 3 years, and then I joined a vessel and became like a bosun / second officer. Did that for about a year whilst studying and doing my Officer of the Watch courses, and got the qualification, and then joined as a second officer on a 75 meters, so slightly bigger than I was on as a bosun, and did that for two and a half years, and then joined a slightly smaller boat as a chief mate. So all the way along that time, you're studying in your holidays, you're doing courses, you've got this training record book that you've got to work on in any downtime that you have on board. It felt like, and don't get me wrong, it was worth it. I would do it 100 times over, but it felt like a continuous educational journey for 5 years straight, I'd say, to get to where you want to be. But with each run that you move up comes huge amounts of sort of pride and satisfaction, and it justifies why you've been doing what you've been doing.
Thank you, Emily. Sorry, Kelly, I didn't mean to interrupt. It was a question that I really wanted the answer to. Carry on.
No, I just wanted to capitalize on what Emily was saying about the role of the first mate. My first mate is a female, and I describe her all the time as my left hand and my right hand. I'd be lost without her. Emily is right. The first mate kind of becomes a catch-all for the captain, outside and inside, and always coming in and checking on me, making sure that I've got what I need to keep the bridge running smoothly, and while, you know, keeping the deck department running smoothly too. And that role is huge. And you're wearing, Emily, you're right, you're wearing many hats as, you know, as the first officer. And that person is my left hand and my right hand. It's a huge role. I think it's very rewarding. I know my first mate describes it that way. Is that it's a very rewarding role, and she's constantly learning. Like you were explaining, Emily, constantly in courses, constantly learning, and I hear the same thing from her. So yeah, it's definitely a huge role and an admirable role, but it's definitely a role that I'd be lost if I didn't have her.
Well, one thing that I've noticed is that out of the five of you, four of you have now moved ashore. And I think it's really important to point out that yachting is an amazing industry, and the things that you learn really do set you up for success if you decide that you want to move to shore. Emily, what are you doing now, and how did your career in yachting assist with that?
So I work at a yacht management company based in London, and I'm a yacht manager's assistant. I'd say from being more biased towards the deck department, but from being in the deck department on board, and a lot of my communications ashore were to our management company, I sort of thought to myself, what's the job that I know most? And that's how to be a chief officer. How can I, what's the most translatable job to that ashore? Because I want to move ashore. I want to settle down, have a family, do all that sort of thing. But I love what I do. It's like saying what Dominique was saying. I didn't want to stop, but I wanted to find something that all my knowledge, all these years of studying these courses didn't go to waste. So I sort of decided to join a yacht management company and be the other person on the end of that communication run, talking to the people on board. Because I kind of had an idea of what they would need. And I wanted to learn what the people ashore needed from the, you know, from the boat. So it translated well. It certainly wasn't something I found straight away. And I actually only got that maybe 3 years after moving ashore. But that's what I'm doing now. And it's great. And it's brought me straight back into the industry that I love and enabled my not so much physical skills, because you're not on the boat anymore, but everything outside of the physical of that job, I'm able to bring back in and use in my current role.
Nice. Well, I'm going to go around and ask you for the most important bit of advice. And yes, Kelly, just one that you could actually give.
Am I last those... again?
Yeah. That you could actually give to those out there that are interested in getting into yachting. Chandra, what would be the most important bit of advice that you could give to those that are interested in starting yachting?
Well, I've got two parts. The first one is to do your research beforehand, know what it is that you're getting yourself into. Like I've had so many interviews with people, and that's one point that comes across often is that newcomers to the industry don't really have a clear idea of what their role on board is going to be. So do your research, make sure that what you're applying for is what you actually want to do. I mean, there's time to move around later on. If you don't want to be on the interior and you want to go to deck, that's fine. But it's not just an Instagram photo shoot the whole time. There is work involved. And the second part to that is persistence. If it is what you want, then don't let anything stop you. Just keep going for it. It is a life-changing experience and a life-changing industry. And it would be silly to give up if you didn't get your first interview. So persistence, definitely.
Thank you. Lynn, what would your advice be?
Oh, goodness. I would say get clear on your why. It's so important to follow your passion. When I was a young woman at school, by that I mean, I really wanted to be a teacher. I then found myself in the hospitality industry because I was only thinking of being an English teacher. I then found myself in the hospitality industry working in hotels and then, as I said, onto yachts. And I ended up teaching in the hospitality industry. That didn't exist when I was growing up. So just keep following your passion, do the things that you love, be very clear on your why. I would say it's so important.
Thank you, Lynn. Emily, any bits of advice?
Yes, agreeing with what the girls have said so far, I would say be a sponge in a way. Take every situation as a learning situation and never think that you know more or better than somebody else. You just, when you're first learning, just take everything in that people are saying and approach it professionally, which I think really stands out to the people, the professionals in the industry, because it is a professional industry, not just a party industry. And if you come in it with the right attitude, you'll go higher, you'll get up the ranks quicker than people taking it slightly less seriously and less professionally. So stay professional, be a sponge.
Thank you, Emily. Dominique, over to you.
I have a few bits of advice. So my number one thing is don't come in with an ego. You know, you are new and you may have done your research and all of those things, but as a senior crew member, we really appreciate people that are open to learning and, you know, don't assume things exactly like Emily said, you know, be open and not only to your own department, but to other departments as well. And don't pursue something that isn't in line with your goals. Be humble and open and friendly and enjoy it. Enjoy it is probably the most important thing. It's a lot of fun and something you don't, you know, not everyone gets to experience. And I would say once you're in the industry, try and find someone that you look up to that could possibly be your mentor and take you through your journey, because that to me is what has made all the difference. When I found my mentor, it was just kind of life-changing and really helped me grow and develop professionally as well. So yeah, that's my advice.
Thank you, Dominique. And Kelly, you can have more than one bit of advice.
Okay. You know what? It's funny to listen to everybody speak now and offer their pieces of advice, because it's exactly what I would say. And I was thinking there for a minute that the one huge piece of advice was going to get left out, which was find a mentor. But I want to digress before that. You know, you're asking what's the piece of advice to get into this industry. Be open-minded. And it's hard to know when you're coming into this industry, not knowing anything about it. Do you want to be interior? Or do you want to be exterior? That's a tough one. So I've had some young individuals reach out to me on the docks and just say, is there any way that I can tag along? I know I want to be a part of this industry. Can I tag along for a day or a couple of days to just kind of see how the boat works, to see where do I want to be? Do I want to be inside? Do I want to be outside? So take any opportunity that comes across you, and be also, don't be afraid to ask. Don't be afraid to reach out to a crew member and ask for advice or their opinion or help, or reach out to that big old, what seems so scary, boat captain on that huge mega yacht and ask them for their opinions. And you know, what Lynn was talking about, knowing your why and being passionate about what you do. And when I was younger, the first owner that I worked for said, find your passion and from there, the rest will come. And that's true. And it takes a minute sometimes to find it, but you will. And be that sponge, like Emily was saying, ask questions, watch and observe a lot, take any opportunity that you can to learn. If you get offers to tag along or work other boats or under other crew or captains, do it, but be open-minded. And I encourage my crew members to freelance from time to time so that they can go work under other captains and other crew members and see other ways that things are done, because my way is not the only way. And I want them to see that there are other ways out there, other things that they can learn and even bring back with us. And you're right, being respectful of the senior crew members and learning from them and having a mentor. You need one of those. You need a cheerleader, especially as a woman trying to climb up the ranks in the deck department. There's going to be days that you feel like you're getting kicked in the gut. And you need that person behind you to keep pushing you forward. And you need that person when you're trying to make a career decision to be able to call up and say, hey, do you think this is a dumb idea? Do you think this is a good idea? So really, everybody said is what I would have said, but probably the greatest piece of advice that I can give is you need a mentor. You need that outside. You need that outside cheerleader. But also don't forget to be your own cheerleader. That's probably most paramount. You've got to, don't forget your drive and your determination and why you want to do this.
Thank you, Kelly. As always, you're a fountain of advice and we appreciate it. I want to open up the panel to any attendee that may have any questions. Please do feel free to send us a message in chat. And as well, for those people that will be watching this later, because we will put it up on the PYA YouTube channel, feel free to, we'll provide links, etc., as well as an email address if you have any questions, and we can redirect them to the specific person on the panel that you have questions for, because I'm sure all of you would be more than willing to provide some advice to somebody looking to get into the yachting industry.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Rhea, I was just thinking, just while we're waiting for people in case they have questions. Don't lose sight. Females coming into the industry. Yes, we have biological clocks and all of that sort of stuff. And like Emily, she wants to move ashore and have children. But we are getting so many transferable skills as we're working, either in the interior or exterior, that we can then move ashore with. And it's hugely valuable to have worked in the industry. I don't think I would connect with my students as well, in other words, your crew, if I hadn't worked in the industry. And I know exactly what it's like to be so tired you can't put two thoughts together, or not to have a day off for 90 days, all of that sort of stuff. I really get it. But what are you know, all the things that you're learning, particularly when you get to the role of purser, there are, you know, right now, chief officers, yacht brokers, all of those sort of people who are taking purser modules because it's stuff they need to learn and they maybe haven't learned. So they're fantastic skills to take ashore. So in the interior, for example, event management, floristry, barista, hotel management, crew recruitment, all of these sort of things will come very naturally to you. As we've all said, follow your passion. There'll be something you're especially attached to that you really love that you can take ashore with you. So it's not the end of a career. It's the start. All of this stuff that you're learning while you're on yachts, you can take ashore. Wonderful opportunity.
That is definitely something that I have seen in my time. Is that so many people, it's invaluable skills that we have seen that come directly out of yachting. And there's a lot of discipline that is taught in yachting. And that does really translate well when you come ashore, because I don't think there's many careers onshore that require the amount of discipline that yachting does, especially when it comes to service and high-end service.
Yeah. And all the intangible stuff like self-leadership, for example, like acceptance of others, like growing emotional intelligence, because you're living and working with people so closely 24/7, you really do have to hone those skills. And there are fantastic training courses, of course, in management and leadership that you can take to help you cope with very unusual circumstances, because you may well be living with people that you wouldn't necessarily like to hang out with. So, you know, this is a great learning curve. It really is.
And also and sharing a bunk.
I just want to add something there. A lot of the skills that you don't really pay attention to at the time, but they become so automated. And I was just explaining to someone the other day how in our industry, you know, you work in a mindset of being solution focused. Like, you don't report problems. Like, if you don't know how to do it, then you figure out a way or you learn about it. And it was something that you, after the years, you think that everybody just has this mindset of being solution focused, but they don't. And it was quite a shock for me the other day. So that's just one of the super skills.
I think what I've taken away as well is diplomacy, learning how to, in a very diplomatic way, you know, because you're all on top of each other all the time. So you need to learn how to navigate through situations in a way that doesn't cause more upset, you know, especially if it's a sensitive topic. So I've really appreciated learning that.
Yeah,
getting a good understanding of how other people function and feel, and it's what we teach with LH very much. So the foundation of our course is learn how other people, what their particular inherent energies, what they bring to the table, and how you work with those energies, how you best as a team collate those energies, and all of you work to your very best. It's a fun thing to learn, and it really is a great lesson. I'm sure it's a great lesson. I think all people before they get married should do this, because it really does teach you tolerance and acceptance. it's a good lesson to learn.
I think I may need to take one of those courses.
Me too.
Jump on in.
Well, ladies, it looks like we're not going to have any questions, but that is fine, because I am sure that we're going to receive a bunch of questions at a later date via email, and we will make sure to forward them on to you. I want to thank all of you for being part of this webinar today. It is very much appreciated, and your expertise is very much appreciated. Once again, it's Chandra Robinson from Start Yachting. We've got Lynn Edwards, Interior for PYA and Luxury Hospitality Management. We have Dominique Smith, Purser from Virtual Pursers, Emily Coates, first mate, deckhand, representing, and as well, you are working for who now?
Burgess Yacht Management.
Brilliant. And then, of course, we have Captain Kelly Gordon, who is on her way to a new ticket shortly.
Yes, ma'am.
So I thank you all for your participation. This has been the PYA webinar, Women in Yachting, highlighting the amazing opportunities available and how women can achieve both their personal and professional goals in the super yacht sector. My name is Rhea. I have been your host. We'll see you again next time.